Sportscast, August 19th, 2019. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, iTunes, Facebook, Periscope. And if you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. And of course, visit us on thesportscast.net for the latest. College football is approaching. Things are happening. Of course, NBA, some news are coming in. And to talk to us and to join us a little bit today is Kyloo Borden. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thank you.
Kyloo Borden, it's been a one heck of a summer. Of course, the NBA free agency. Now we got some college football coming up. And our first story is Jalen Hurts is officially named the Oklahoma starting quarterback by Lincoln Riley. Of course, this is no surprise, but of course, there's been other schools naming other starting quarterbacks, for example, like Miami. But how significant is this for Jalen Hurts?
I think this is huge for him. Obviously, he had a lot of success at Alabama. He was replaced by Tua, who was a much better quarterback for him. But he had really good success at Alabama, and I think this is really huge for Oklahoma. Obviously, they have back-to-back Heisman winners. Our defense has obviously let it down in the last 2 years. So I think bringing in a new defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch from Ohio State, and he had previous experience at Washington, and he did a pretty good job there. I think that's going to be really huge for Oklahoma. It's not really a surprise because it's expected that new Jalen Hurts is going to be the quarterback of this team. So hopefully Lincoln Riley can help him.
Will Jalen Hurts fit in with the style of Lincoln Riley and his tactics?
I think he'll fit in because he's a great runner. And I think what something that Lincoln Riley has been able to show over his 2 years of coaching is that he can do it with multiple styles, whether it's Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, back-to-back number one pick. So I think Lincoln Riley would have no problem, you know, adjusting to Jalen Hurts and using what works for him and combining it and see if they can win a national championship.
In other news, Ohio State also announced that Justin Fields, a Georgia transfer, will be a starting quarterback. How big is this for Ohio State?
I think it's huge for Ohio State because last year, obviously going from Haskins, you know, sometimes it's tough to replace a good quarterback. Haskins had a great season. I think it's going to be great for them. It didn't really work out in Georgia because he lost to Drake Fromm, but Ohio State, he has a new opportunity. Ohio State has one of the best classes, and it should really be good. They should, you know, be for a national championship conversation. So I think it's really huge for him. And you have a new coach in Ryan Day, so I think it'd be huge for him.
Yeah, something that, you know, people have been naming, you know, starting quarterbacks this past couple of days. University of Miami also did not name the transfer from Ohio State. I think his name is, correct me if I'm wrong, Terrell? Or, hold on, let me look at the roster here. He is a transfer from Ohio State. Tate Martell was not named the starting quarterback for Miami. He's a transfer from Ohio. Are you surprised about this move?
I don't think it's a surprise because I think they start to trickle. I think certain teams like Uri know is going to be a quarterback, and it could just be a situation like the other coach at the program doesn't want to know who the starter is until, like, the game time. That could happen, or in a situation in Oklahoma when you already know who the quarterback is, why not just name it, you know?
Yeah, Jaren Williams was named the starter and quarterback for Miami. Of course, Tate Martell does want to play wide receiver. Do you think that's a good move for him?
Do I think it's a good move for him?
Yeah.
I don't really have any thoughts of it. If you could play more positions, but it's like you're going to stick to quarterback, you got to be all in on quarterback. It's very hard to learn quarterback, so you got to be all in.
The Associated Press released their top 25 of college football. Let me read you the top 10. First goes Clemson, then Alabama, then Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State at number 5, LSU, Michigan, Florida, and Notre Dame. Notre Dame, and then last, Texas at 10. How do you view this list? Do you think it's pretty accurate?
I think it's pretty accurate. Obviously, Clemson won a national championship last year, 44-16. Alabama's the runner-up, so you have that. Georgia's going to have another strong class. The SEC, you know, gets a lot of, you know, hype. It's, you know, Georgia's deserves so at 3. Oklahoma, if they improve their defense, has a chance to go even more up. The only why they're not higher than 4 is because of their defense. Hopefully, bringing in Alex Grinch will help my Sooners. They lost a corner in Trey Winterward. Hopefully, they're able to replace him. To already not good secondary last year. Ohio State at 5 is fine. You got Ryan Day come back, a new coach, new system. Michigan at 7. Hopefully Michigan can make some noise. Finally, Urban Meyer doesn't have, you know, Jim Harbaugh doesn't have to do Urban Meyer, so Hopefully he's able to find a way to beat Ohio State. Has no more excuses. Notre Dame at 9. I would move them up a little more. That's the only problem I have with the list. Notre Dame has always been great. They've always been slept on. I know they play an independent. A lot of people like to knock conferences. I feel like they should be up more. Texas at 10 is a sleeper to me. They have been rising up with their bowl win last year. So I would see Notre Dame as higher. That's the only thing.
So would you put Florida at number 9 and Notre Dame at 8?
Yeah, I'd move Notre Dame. I would move Notre Dame up.
Yeah, because people are saying that Florida is overrated. I think they have issues with injuries in their squad. And, yeah, it's something that I really do agree with you on that one. A lot of people on Twitter and also in the sportscast were talking about how Florida should be not that high as number 8. So let me read you the rest. Oregon, number 11. Texas A&M, 12. Washington, Utah, Penn State, Auburn at 16. UCF at 17. Michigan State at 18. Wisconsin at 19. Iowa, then Iowa State, Syracuse, Washington State, Nebraska, and Stanford. We see one of the Big 12 teams, Iowa State, at number 21. How do you view this, like the rest of the list?
I think the rest of the list is fine. I think Penn State at 15. I think Auburn at 16. Auburn's usually always around that area. I think because they, you know, sometimes they struggle. They have a big game every now and then that they can't win. Of course, they lose to Alabama. That should be expected. UCF at 17, UCF people, University of Central Florida, think they should be higher. That's an appropriate spot for them. And the rest of us is fine. 22, you have Syracuse. 23, you have Washington State. 25, you have Stanford. They were cracked top 25. So the rest of us is fine. I don't really have any complaints there.
Yeah, obviously, you know, these teams will definitely shift throughout the season once week one. I like the first big game is Auburn and Oregon. And, of course, whatever happens there is going to be interesting. Obviously, Oregon's number 11, which they call them a sleeper. Do you know or do you think any of these lower teams could be a sleeper and maybe move up really quick?
Of the lower teams, what range are we talking about?
Let's go around between 11 and 25.
Out of 11 and 25? I would have to go Auburn because they're in the SEC and they always play tough against those teams. And they've been able to beat Alabama in that Chris Davis game a couple years ago. So I would have to go Auburn. And I would have to go Auburn. And that's about it. I mean, I don't really see much. I don't really see Nebraska. I mean, not really. I don't really see Stanford. Wisconsin doesn't do it for me. Their defense, their coaching doesn't do it for me. UCF doesn't play well. As much as they talk about it, I mean, their division is kind of thing to me. So I would have to go Auburn. I don't really see Texas A&M as being – they've never really been able to beat opponents in big games. So I would have to go Auburn.
My look at the top 25, I'm really not shocked, but like, okay, Oklahoma at number 4. Is it because Jalen Hurts is there, or is this because overall they're a good team?
I think it's because you want to move Oklahoma higher than 4. But last year, the defense, I mean, 28 straight points to Alabama. I mean, it is Alabama, but, I mean, you didn't even give Kyler Murray a chance. I mean, if you look watch the rest of the game, Oklahoma actually did fine the rest of the game offensively. I know that it's easy to score when you're down so much, but Oklahoma's offense was actually fine. They got off to a slow start because the defense practically never gave them a chance. So that's the reason why Oklahoma's number 4. I mean, back-to-back years, they obviously brought a new coordinator, Alex Grinch, to hopefully shore up some of the defense. Hopefully at least get from 100 to the top 50. We don't expect we'll go from 100 to 25, but if they can make some gradual improvements and at least get somewhere better, not allow 35 points a game, then that would certainly do justice.
We see 4 SEC teams in the top 10. Not surprisingly, of course, that they're usually up there in numbers. Georgia is a clear 3rd place. LSU at 6. Florida 8-8. I mean, the SEC, do you think the SEC will have a big statement again this year?
I think the SEC is going to have a big statement this year because of Alabama and Georgia. And LSU will obviously fall down from 6. I don't see them staying at 6. But and I think Florida's a little overrated. But I think the SEC, because when you have 2 of the top teams in the nation in the top 4, that's always going to be consistent. Alabama's going to beat it, and Georgia's going to beat it throughout the whole year. And it depends if they're able to beat Alabama, if they're going to be able to get in. I don't want to hear from Georgia fans why we didn't get in with 2 losses when, you know, none of the teams have been able to get in with 2, two losses since the college football playoffs even started. And you had the opportunity to beat Bama, and you were winning headed into the fourth quarter, and you couldn't do it. So they're obviously going to be there. And Florida's a little overrated, but the SEC is going to definitely be where it's at, and along with the other conferences.
Can we see, like, another LSU have a good start, and then at the end they just, you know, choke against Alabama?
It's definitely possible. Like I said with Georgia, it's definitely possible. These teams have had their great moments against the SEC, and they've had their opportunities. They just haven't been able to take advantage. Like you said, LSU always get off to this great start, and then when they have to play Alabama, typical happens. So.
Something that we definitely got to look at in the college football arena. Of course, here at the sportscast, we're very specialized in college football. We have more views than any other sport or any other league in the sports world. But of course, we'll be definitely monitoring the college football series this next couple of months. It's gonna be pretty exciting. And of course, our big show, which Kailu will be on it, will be this Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking every conference. Kailu is specialized in the Big 12. He'll be focused on that this year. Of course, he'll be talking about other conferences if he needs to. Let's go into the NBA. Of course, the Rich Paul, he's an agent of the NBA, and maybe Kailu can just tell us a little bit of what's going on with that situation.
So recently the college came out with a new rule that Rich Paul and other future agents, which doesn't particular Rich Paul, but they're going to have requirements. One of the requirements is they're going to have to pass a test in Indianapolis by the NCAA straight. They're going to have a three-year background also, you know, just being a regular agent, which Rich Paul is actually for, and he's up for the other thing. But they're also going to have to have a bachelor's degree. And my own stance was it depends. I mean, obviously, Rich Paul was able to do it without a typical degree. I think Rich Paul represents, in case people don't know, he represents Anthony Davis, he represents Ben Simmons, he represents LeBron. This is all case by case. It worked for Rich Paul. He obviously used his experience over his college necessary experience. He didn't have any. He's able to relate to the community, so I feel like that's been able to help him. But for me, it's all about a case-by-case situation. It worked for Rich Paul, but in some situations, education is needed. And also, some situations, overrated. He was able to use his experience from his background growing up in Cleveland, giving back to his community, and he was able to use that to make it work for him. So I think it's all about, like, a case-by-case situation, how do you use your experience, what you do with your college experience. So that depends.
Can you tell can you explain to the audience, who is Rich Paul and what is his background?
Rich Paul is an American sports agent. He's based in Cleveland. He founded the Clutch Sports Group, which represents Anthony Davis, Ben Simmons, Draymond Green. He's a longtime friend of LeBron. So he was recently in the news because he felt like the NCAA gave out a new proposal to future agents that want to be like Rich Paul, that want to be in the industry. So basically it wouldn't affect him because he's already established, obviously, but it'll affect future agents that want to be like him. So one of the requirements, like I said, like a couple minutes ago, was they're going to have to pass a test at the NCAA's headquarters in Indianapolis. The second requirement is they're going to have a bachelor's degree. And the third requirement is you're going to have 3 years experience. So 3 years experience, you have to pass the bachelor's degree. So those are things that Rich Paul, because he feels like, you know, the black people may not have access to, you know, they graduate from college because due to their finance, their background. So basically Rich Paul was fighting against that.
Adam Silver said today, I think Rich has more than demonstrated that he's a professional negotiator and that he's highly trained and competent agent. I think the best way would be to say that there are exceptions that can be made, and he's perfect example of that. I didn't even know all about Rich's background until I read a long feature on him in Sports Illustrated recently. I knew a little bit about his background and how he met LeBron and their other group that worked together, but it's a classic sort of American rags to riches history, in essence, what he's overcome in this life, difficult circumstances, and be the success he has totally demonstrates that there are other paths to success. A traditional one is through college, but certainly for the league, and I can't speak for the NCAA. We want to ensure people from all walks of life can be successful in our system. One thing that I do think maybe be implemented in the future is, you know, going to the NBA G League. I think, you know, jump into that. Obviously, I think the minimum Your minimum salary is $150,000. Do you think that's a possibility NBA could say, you don't have to go to college, but you could go to the G League?
I think it's a possibility, but I think from a resource standpoint, I think the NBA will have to do a better job of making sure the transfer from high school to the G League is there, just like they have with the with all the AAU circuits and all that. I think they would definitely have to improve the G League. I think all 30 teams will have to have a G League facility, because not all 30 teams have a G League. I think most of them do, but the Portland Trailblazers don't have a G League team. So all 30 teams will have to have a G League team. You would have to update, and you have to straight invest in your G League teams. I think the NBA will have to look into having all 30 teams invest in your G League team, and you would have to have a system in which the G League, you know, because we have a G League now, but, like, they don't talk about it. So, like, you would have to have a situation where people are investing in it, people are making sure guys are cared for it. There's a system in place to make sure it works.
And of course, there's been some players that have transferred from the G League to the NBA, like Quinn Cook.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a good opportunity, good development league. I think it gives a lot more opportunity for players, but also, you know, on teams or, you know, in small markets, just to have a basketball team and perhaps maybe, you know, have those players develop and then go on. And I think PJ Tucker was also went through the G League, I think. Maybe not. I got to double check on that, but... definitely opportunities out there for players to excel, and you know, like the NBA roster is so small. It's like 16 per roster, so it's not as much as the NFL. But yeah, that's something that we definitely will take a look at. Another news in the NBA: Boogie Cousins got injured, ACL tear. What are your thoughts about that? Would that be a huge loss for the Lakers?
I think it's not a huge. I don't think it's a minor blow for the Lakers. I don't think it's a huge blow, but I think it's a small blow, because obviously Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center in heavy minutes. So I think it's a small blow for the Lakers. I don't think it's huge, because you paid him 3.5, so I don't think you would ask him for much from Boogie, like all-star like he was from before. So I don't think it's a huge blow in that sense, but I'm not going to minimize the blow, because it's still a death piece. It sucks for Boogie, because this is a guy that came back from an Achilles. He obviously rushed his way back with, and then he hurt his quad, and then now he hurt his ACL, just working out, bumping knees. It's a really huge blow for him. Just a guy that, you know, for all his life to come back. You know, first couple years with the Sacramento Kings, he fought the reputation of he was the problem, the organization, and no structural, you know, which direction they were going. And he's 29. He was obviously trying to get in the best shape of his life. And where does this put him? And he took a chance. He gambled. It sucked for him because he took a one-year contract. He thought he was going to win a championship with Golden State. They had a pretty good shot to win a championship for Clay, and Kevin Durant got hurt. I mean, it's tough for him. This is 3 injuries in the last 19 months for Boogie, and it starts a long rehab back. And it just sucks for him. It sucks for him as a person. It sucks for him as a person because I didn't really expect much from the Lakers. If we got something, it would have been good. I didn't really expect all-star. I expect him to play like 15, 18 minutes. But it's such a more him the person. This is now his third major injury in the last 19 months. And this is the guy that's going to be 30 years old in a game where they're already trying to get out big man. So it just really sucks for him.
Yeah, it really was a big blow for his, for him. I mean, of course, he really came back strong when he was with the Warriors at the finals and definitely had a good performance. But yeah, it's something that I think the Lakers were kind of prepared. I know Boogie was kind of injury prone, but he's 29 going to 30, and who knows, he might have a good rest of his career if he rehabs correctly.
Definitely.
So of course, we are coming to the end of the show. The Yankees had an interesting weekend, a few ejections. What happened there?
So the Yankees in Saturday's game, the Yankees were arguing over things. Phil Cuzzi, the umpire, it started early with James Paxton, where he felt like he should have had a strikeout. It led to a 2-run single in the fifth inning. He felt like he should have had a strikeout, and over Carlos Santana was a high pitch. He felt like he should have had a strikeout. The catcher was standing up. They felt like he should have had a strikeout, and then in the sixth inning, he just boiled over in the camera. Maybe that bet. Brett Gardner got ejected for tossing his bat. And for me, it was never, like, it's never a rule that you can't do that in baseball. Phil Cuzzi's going over there instigating to the Yankees dugout, you know, to eject people, basically inviting the ejection. So for me, it's like you're walking over, you're basically inviting ejection. He had an incident in 2009, so this is the history, you doing that. Inc. is a very passionate team. They had the best record in the majors. So for me, it was like the umpire was clearly targeting Brett Gardner. There's no rule in the book. There was another umpire, and the last time Gardner was ejected. He's been in the league for a while. He's only been ejected 6 times in his career. It's the second time this year. And he threw out the wrong player. The first time was supposed to be Cameron Maybin. Obviously, he had a legit beef. The pitch with Cameron Maybin was clearly a ball. This is why there's a lot of talk in baseball to go to robot umps. I'm all for the personal, you know, relationships with the umpire. But as an umpire and as a referee, your job is not to make it about himself. And he was clearly targeting the Yankees. He went over to the dugout. And he was just clearly targeting the Yankees.
Well, baseball has their perks, and of course the umpire system and everything else. But of course, Kyler was very involved with Major League Baseball, and that's something that, you know, we're definitely going to be following throughout the rest of the season, and of course to the World Series, where we'll be definitely more paying attention than last year, because last year we didn't cover as much. But Kyler's here to save the baseball season. But Yankees are 83-43 percentage, 6.59, and the Rays are right behind them. Of course, Yankees are going up against Houston, I believe, to win the American League. Am I correct?
Yeah, and also wanted to touch on the last point about Brett Gardner. As much as it, you know, you want to thing, I think what they did on Sunday, I mean, you gotta, like, because like you're gonna be competing in the playoffs, so you want to make sure that you don't get your players to get, you know, ejected, especially when the Yankees are shorthanded at this point in the season. You don't want to compromise as much. You may be right until they, you know, think about the robot umpires. You want to make sure that you continue to foster those great relationships, because in the playoffs, you don't want to lose a game because of that relationship, because all the umpires, the fact of the matter, even though they may be wrong, they all talk to each other. So you don't want to have a habit of necessarily doing it, even though you may be right.
Bryce Harper, the $300 million man, had a great week last week by ending the fifth longest active playoff drought in baseball. How's he doing so far with the Phillies?
I think Bryce Harper has been up and down. He's had his moments of greatness, and obviously I think the home run against the Cubs walk-off grand slam, I felt like hopefully that could be a launching point. I mean, you got $330 million. I mean, the Phillies, Philadelphia fans are very passionate, as we saw with the Eagles a couple years ago. So I think it's been a mixed bag for Bryce Harper this year. It's been a very mixed bag for him. He's had moments where he's done great, he's had moments where he struggled. I always look at Bryce Harper. He's batting .254, 26 homers, 90 RBIs. He's been hot of late. So I think Bryce Harper, for him, it's all about drawing his walk. He has a 37% OBP, which is really good. He's obviously struggled this year against righties, .248. But he's been solid. He's been training. For Bryce, it's all going to be about, you know, how consistent is he play. This is why I never, ever put him in a Mike Trout, you know, thing, because Mike Trout is simply more, you know, consistent. So I think for Bryce, it's going to be all about being consistent for the rest of the year, having those periods where he doesn't have those extended slumps. Slumps are part of baseball, but you want to try to have as few as you can have so that they can try to get in the plus, because they're not winning division. The Braves are going to win that division. I'm really confident on that. The Braves are going to win that division. And you're really bound for a wild card. And for me, it's going to be the NL Central and the NL East. So those are the two divisions that's going to get a wild card, because no one's coming out of NL West, because the Giants aren't going to get a wild card spot. The Cardinals aren't definitely getting a wild card spot. And none of those the Rockies aren't getting it with their pitching. So it's going to come down to NL East and NL Central. Either the Cubs, Brewers, Cardinals, that's going to be very interesting to see who wins Central. Whoever doesn't win the Central, that's going to be a wild card team. And then in the NL East, it's going to be the Nationals. Because they're pitching Patrick Corbin, Steven Strasburg, and Max Scherzer's come back tomorrow. So that's strong enough to get you in the plus, and then anything can happen in that one game. And the Nationals have a deep pitching staff. Plus, they have Juan Soto, who's amazing. Juan Soto's amazing. And they have Trey Turner, who can steal a lot of bases. And the Nationals, that can get them in the plus.
It feels like there's a lot of excitement this year. I'm not sure, because the Yankees are doing well, or maybe because of Bryce Harper. But what is it?
I think a lot of excitement is the young talent in baseball. You obviously have Juan Soto, you have Ronald Acuna, you have Pete Alonso. I think it's the young talent in Major League Baseball. I think the top every team I consistently say are the Astros, the Yankees, and the Dodgers. Those are the great teams. The Indians are bidding for good. I think the Indians are good. They're, you know, contending for that fourth thing. And I think everything else is up in the air. Cubs are great, but Cubs don't win a lot of road games. They don't win games in NL Central on the road. Quintana's been up and down. Yu Darvish has been pitching well of late. So I think those teams, the Brewers don't, the Brewers struggle in the rotation. Their bullpen is really taking a step back this year. The Mets, I don't believe in the Mets. I mean, the Mets don't beat good opponents. The Mets are going to find a way to lose. They played the Braves 2 out of 3 and they lost.
It's not because you're a Yankee fan, right?
No, it's not because I'm a Yankee fan. It's that the Mets are going to find a way to let you down. They're going to play the Indians this week. In the schedule that they were playing like tomorrow. They've only played the Nationals, were their only team that they beat that was over 500 in that stretch that they
you're
played.
You're not getting on my Marlins now. No, but I agree. Yeah, Marlins are not a good team. Hopefully, like they say, it's a 5-year plan, but, you know, it takes time to build these teams. But, you know, sometimes you got to be very patient. But, yeah, Yankees are having a good one. Phillies, do you think they'll go deep in the playoffs or do you think they'll stop somewhere?
Who did you say I think will go deep? I couldn't hear.
The Phillies.
I don't think they'll go deep because Jake Arrieta is going to be out the rest of the year, and it's just a bummer. He has his pitch well this year. I don't think the Phillies have the rotation to necessarily go deep in the playoffs because Jake Arrieta is going to be out the rest of the year. And I don't think they have the lineup. I don't think their lineup is that strong. Their bullpen is middle. I don't really trust their bullpen. And Gabe Kapler is, I don't really trust his in-game decision to go deep in the playoffs.
I will ask you this later on when the playoff starts, but can you name a sleeper right now?
A sleeper in the playoffs would be the Indians because the Indians, they're in the AL Central hunt with the Twins. So whoever wins that's going to be nine in the wild card. So I think the Indians are great because Jose Ramirez is heating up. He's been really great. He crushed my Yankees this weekend. Really bummed out by that. Francisco Lindor is still one of the best shortstops in the game. Obviously, you have that. You have Yasiel Puig, who's really been helping him. He is really good. Shane Bieber in their rotation has done a great job. Zach Plesac, who we saw this weekend, did a solid job. And also, they have Corey Kluber still lurking. So the Indians have the pitching staff, what it takes. They also have a solid bullpen. Jose Ramirez has been coming along of late. You still have Lindor, one of the best shortstops in the game. So the Indians are definitely a sleeper. When they played the Yankees, they were actually up 2-0 in the series, but the Yankees were fortunate enough, and I was thankful enough, they came back and they won that series in 5. So, but the Indians, with their pitching staff, and Terry Francona, who's a 2-time champion, they're going to be right there, and they're a sleeper.
You think, are those trades paying off for you guys for the Yankees? Like, is that, I mean, you saw this, okay, this is how it's panning out, or are you surprised so far it's been okay?
You talking about the off-season trades?
No, like the, right before, like the trade deadline that happened this past couple weeks ago.
How's Edwin working out for the Yankees?
Yeah.
I think it's working out fine. It's obviously brought a lot of length to the lineup. The Yankees have needed it because, God, we've suffered a lot of injuries in the Mets. And I also think something this year is that we've had a lot more depth. I think the Yankees always have depth, but I think for me this year, the things that really stand out to me is how well guys are playing. I mean, you talk about Giovanni Urshela, who couldn't hit last year, 220, the Indians and Blue Jays, he got released. And he comes to the Yankees, all of a sudden he's hitting over 330, and I think that's really been great. DJ LeMay has been great for us. I've always knew he won the batting title, but just the increased amount of power. People talk about the short porch Yankee Stadium, well, then allow us to hit it on the ground. And that's been great for us. Adam Ottavino from the Rockies has been really great. His slider has been really, really good. I knew it was good, but when you first see it on your team, now it's better and it's been great. So the Yankees have had immeasurable contributions. Even guys like Talkman, guys from the minor leagues, have really done a great job. And the Yankees really haven't missed a beat. This is a team that's 83-43, best record in the majors, despite all the injuries. I want Aaron Boone to get better from an emotional standpoint. I understand last year he was too rigid. He didn't show a lot of emotion. This year I feel like he's even done a great job at, you know, getting better as a manager in his second year.
Well, we'll keep the Yankee coverage going with Kailu. He's a New York City native, and, of course, he has the insight of what's going on with the Yankees. And, of course, if you have any comments or any questions, leave a comment below so we can talk about the sport or talk about Yankees or any questions. Anything else before we head into game predictions?
No.
Major League Baseball, Kansas City Royals at the Baltimore Orioles.
I'm going to go with the Kansas City Royals.
Washington Nationals versus the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I'm going to go Nationals. Nationals have been playing, they're playing the Pirates. The Pirates have been struggling since the All-Star break. I read something in Athletic, the Pirates are just fighting. There's organizational power dysfunction. So I'm going Nationals by a lot tonight.
Seattle at the Rays.
Since it's in the Trop and the Rays play well at home, I'm going to go with the Rays.
San Diego at Cincinnati.
San Diego at Cincinnati.
The Padres.
I'm going to stay with Cincinnati. I'm going to stay with Cincinnati. They're 35-30 at home, and the Pirates, the Padres are 29-32. So I'm going to go. I'm going to stick with the home team.
Milwaukee Brewers at St. Louis.
This is going to be really interesting because this is really interesting because both teams are fighting for the NL Central. They're in the thick of things. Zach Davis against Dakota Hudson. I think this is really going to be a great game because both teams are fighting for the NL Central and for the, you know, for the playoffs. So I think it's going to be really interesting. But since the Cardinals are home, I'm going to stay with the Cardinals.
Angels at the Texans. No, at the Rangers. Texas Rangers. Sorry.
I'm going to go with Rangers. Rangers.
Yeah, that's going to be also very tight because they pretty have kind of close records. And, of course, NFL preseason, San Francisco at the Denver Broncos.
I don't know. Broncos.
That's something that preseason, like anyone can win. It's a flip of a coin.
Yeah, it's tough to tell. Yeah.
Random question. You don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. You don't know when they're going to take out their starters. So.
Yeah.
You have to start the same play, yeah.
It's a meaningless game. Favorite pizza restaurant, Papa John's, Pizza Hut, Domino's, or Little Caesars?
Domino's. Domino's. You can't do wrong with Domino's.
You're right. I remember you saying that. I think I shouldn't ask that question because I think you mentioned it in a previous sportscast. But just to reinforce our memory, Domino's is Kailu's favorite pizza restaurant, which I think is pretty good. I think over here in Florida, it's two medium pizzas for $7 each. I don't know if it's the same
yeah,
in New York.
Yeah, we have it too.
Okay, yep, there we go. Definitely. It's nationwide. If it's in New York City, which is a little bit more expensive, it's nationwide. It has to be. And, Kailu, how can people reach you to talk to you about Tate Martell?
They can reach me on Twitter at KailuBorden12, and you can reach me on Instagram at KailuB123.
Kailu,
and you can also reach me on Instagram.
Instagram as well.
Instagram and Twitter. Definitely.
Yeah. And what are we going to expect at the college preview show, college football preview show?
We're going to expect heavy Oklahoma, and we're going to expect Big 12, along with other things to talk about, like preview college football, predictions, who's going to win the Heisman, who's going to be sleepers, and all of that, and more.
Who is the second best team in the Big 12 right now, you think?
The second best team is Texas, without a doubt. I think Sam Ellinger. And Texas always plays us tough. Every time we play Texas always plays us tough. So I think Texas is definitely going to be the second best team in the Big 12, without a doubt. Texas, every time we play them, always play us tough. But lucky Oklahoma gets on the right side of it.
And what I'm hearing, that the Big 12 has a better conference than the ACC. That's what I'm hearing.
Definitely. I'm definitely for the Big 12. We definitely have a better conference than the ACC, without a doubt.
Well, there you have it. College football preview show this Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern. We have the whole gang coming in. And it should be very exciting. Who's the best? Who's not the best? Of course, with Kailu covering Big 12, which we haven't done before. We usually cover SEC, Pac-12, and the Big 10 and ACC, but now we have the Big 12 in the lineup in the sportscast. 1 hour long show. Should be pretty exciting, pretty fun. The college football season begins this weekend. And, of course, you can follow us along on thesportscast.net or on Twitter at thesportscast1 for all the latest. And, of course, read our latest articles, what's happening. Is Tua Tagovailoa the best quarterback right now, or is it Herbert? It's all in the debate. But who knows what's going to happen, because Jalen Hurts could prove everyone wrong again. Anyways, Kailu, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Thank you.